Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm Janet Hutchings, EQMM's editor. This month we feature the work of Martin Edwards, a writer whose many honors in the mystery field include a Best Short Story Award from Britain's Crime Writers Association. He's the author of two popular series of mystery novels, plus several standalone novels, and about 40 short stories. Nearly half of those stories have appeared in EQMM. Martin Edwards is not only a mystery writer, however. Since 1996, he has also been the editor of a series of yearly anthologies from the Crime Writers Association, and he's a well-known critic and reviewer to boot. We recorded this podcast at the recent Malice Domestic Convention in Bethesda, Maryland. Here is Martin Edwards reading his story, No Flowers, from the May 2012 EQMM.
Sunlight burst through the arched windows. For an instant, Kelly was blinded. Unbelievable, isn't it? Brett asked. It's amazing. Despite the sunlight, the house felt chilly. As she shaded her eyes, she couldn't help shivering. I knew you'd love it. He nodded towards the brilliant light. Those aren't the original leaded windows, but triple glazing in precisely the same style. There was never any stained glass in St. Lucy's, but no expense has been spared, I promise. St. Lucy's? Name of the old church. The developer changed it to Meadowview. More appropriate, truly rural. And you want to move in soon? Today! Decisiveness was a quality he prized. The deal's done, contracts were exchanged simultaneously with completion. Already? I had to keep my plans secret, in case negotiations broke down. Oh, you're so thoughtful. She hugged him. And it really is ours. Down to the last maple floorboard. He lowered his voice, and for a few seconds it was almost as if the house were still a church. I only hope it goes a little way towards making up for, you know, what's happened. Churlish and ungrateful to say nothing could make up for what happened. She was thankful that he cared so much. After she lost the baby, he might have abandoned her. But in his way, he tried his best to offer comfort. I want to put your name on the title deeds, he said. We can sort the paperwork once you give the landlord notice to quit your flat. I don't care about title deeds, she said. Financial and legal stuff meant nothing to her. She was happy to leave bureaucracy to him. He was the banker, after all. She only worked in a florist's. But is there a bus route nearby? How will I get to the shop? I'll buy you a car, he said. Though really, sweetie, you don't want to stay stuck behind a counter all day. I like the job, she said. You know I love flowers. Why not design a floral arrangement for the sitting area? This space calls out for a splash of colour. Make a contrast with the potted palm. A customer once told me palms symbolise the victory of the faithful over enemies of the soul. She gazed at the exposed rafters of the ceiling. How old is this place? 140 years old. When did it stop being a church? Oh, the last service was held 3 years ago. He shook his head. I bet there were scarcely half a dozen old folk in the congregation. The church authorities realised St. Lucy's was uneconomic. In the end, five parishes were merged, and the redundant churches were put on the market. Sound business decision. The figures never added up. Sad, though. There comes a time when you have to rationalise, he said. For a moment, she recalled those endless nights, crying herself to sleep in her pokey flat, when she feared he might rationalise her out of his life. Foolish of her. She should have shown more trust. The conversion was a labour of love, Brett said. St. Lucy's was bought by a man called Dixon. He was born round here, but moved to London with his family. I gather he dreamed of coming back to the village. Not that there was much of a village left to come back to. How do you mean? The school closed, along with the post office, and the pub was knocked down. Most of the cottages on the main street have become second homes or a base for commuting couples. According to the estate agent, hardly anyone has lived in the village more than 5 years. Oh, that's a pity. It's progress, sweetie. By all accounts, the whole area called out for an upgrade. Investment was required. Don't fret, there's a retail park 10 minutes away by car. They sell everything you could wish for. You won't have to depend on some grubby little village shop for overpriced groceries. She squeezed past the potted palm, which was nearly as tall as Brett, and sank into the clutches of a leather sofa, one of three stationed at right angles to each other. An enormous television screen completed the square. "You can't see the wiring," he said. "It's cleverly concealed, but we have the latest cinema sound system." At a flick of a remote, the screen sprang to life. A rock band performing in concert. Kelly didn't recognise their contorted faces. Flowers were her thing, not music. The sound deafened her. The strobe lights made her want to shut her eyes. "The equipment's all to the highest specification," Brett said as he silenced the acoustic guitar. "Hot water, underfloor heating, zoned thermostats, and it's environmentally friendly with a biotreatment sewage system. Come and see the mezzanine gallery." As she followed him up the stairs, he maintained a running commentary on their surroundings. "Matching maple tread, see? Those black strings are made of steel. The safety glass meets the highest standards." As they reached the top, Kelly found herself facing an enormous four-poster bed. "Silk curtains as well as sheets," he said. "Over there is our ensuite bathroom. Mahogany framed screens for privacy. Not that we need to worry about that when we don't have guests to stay." "Guests? Of course. You know how important it is for me to entertain clients and colleagues. My progress up the ladder depends on keeping them satisfied. You'll enjoy the company, honestly." Kelly said nothing. Brett's best clients were from the Middle East, rich men who traded in oil. They used charm, but she didn't care for the way they looked at her. "Seriously, you'll be able to experiment." He paused. "You know, you can try out all the appliances in that wonderful kitchen downstairs." She gazed across the living space to the gleaming breakfast bar and state-of-the-art stainless steel units at the far end of the house. She and Brett might have boarded a starship where no germs and grime could survive. "This is where the organist used to play," Brett said, waving towards the matching bedroom cupboards. "But when the place was converted, of course, the organ had to go." Later, Kelly took herself out for a walk while Brett made some calls. He always had calls to make. He liked to say he made sure his clients always got whatever they wanted. The grounds of Meadowview were smaller than she'd expected, though, as Brett said, this wasn't a problem, since neither of them were gardeners. She could plant a few flowers at the back. He'd dig out a border to keep her happy. There were no gravestones. Another selling point of the property, Brett explained. It was rare to find an Anglican church in this part of England without an accompanying graveyard. St. Lucy's Cemetery once sprawled behind the rectory, he'd heard, but the parish allowed it to become overgrown, a haunt for the village's few indigenous teenagers to misbehave with each other and take drugs at night when no adults were around. The planners insisted it be tidied up as part of the regeneration project. Now, the gravestones lined a neat formal garden that linked the lane to the main street. Brett wasn't sure if the remains were left under the redeveloped land or reinterred elsewhere, but the whole garden was monitored by CCTV and the gates were locked as soon as darkness fell. Much more respectful. Beyond the meadow, a string of industrial units lined the horizon. Sun glinted on their dark metal roofs. A throaty rumble came from vehicles queuing on the slip road, although the new motorway was invisible. Across the lane from Meadow View stood a large building, about as old as her new home. At first she thought it was another house and wondered what her new neighbours would be like, but then she saw the front garden had been turned into a car park with spaces marked for half a dozen cars and spotted a freshly painted board announcing the place as headquarters of Old Rectory Technology Solutions. A sign indicated the way to the Meadow Memorial Garden, but Kelly ignored it. The memory of her lost baby was too raw for her to wish to confront fresh reminders of mortality. The lane was narrow and lacked a pavement. Three times in as many minutes, Kelly pressed herself into the hawthorn hedge as a lorry raced round the bend on the wrong side of the road, taking a shortcut to the business park. At least there was no need to worry about traffic noise in the house. Brett said the triple glazing made it soundproof. A couple of hundred yards further on, the lane doglegged, and Kelly saw the junction with the main street that ran through the village. A shame the school had closed. A quiet place in the countryside was perfect for bringing up youngsters. She wanted to try again soon for another baby, even though her pregnancy had been an accident. To begin with, she dreaded Brett's reaction when she broke the news. He admitted thinking he was still too young for fatherhood, but after that first fraught conversation, he'd never raised the possibility of abortion again. The miscarriage was the worst thing that had ever happened to her, worse even than her mother's death from cancer. Dad had deserted them both when she was 5, and she'd never heard from him since. But at least she had Brett. He wept when she lost the baby, though he soon seemed to get over it. She rid herself of any impression that his generosity was tinged with relief. Her mother used to be fond of saying that everything happens for the best in the long run, though Mum's own troubled life scarcely proved her point. "Are you the new person?" a hoarse voice asked. Kelly's thoughts had wandered, and she hadn't seen the old woman leaning on the gate of a dilapidated cottage close to the junction. The woman's white hair was untidy, and her lined face reminded Kelly of parchment. Her misty grey eyes were fixed on some point far away. She wore an ancient black overcoat that seemed too big for her. An unlikely soulmate, but if the village was to become her home, Kelly must make friends, and this old biddy would have forgotten far more about the neighbourhood than incomers would ever know. "My partner and I have just bought Meadowview, yes." "Meadowview?" The woman closed her eyes for a moment, as if determined to shut out the here and now. "St. Lucy's, you mean?" Kelly hated causing offence. Better make it plain that she was an ignoramus. Most people liked to give help to others who were in need. It made them feel superior. "I wasn't even aware there was a saint called Lucy," she said with a friendly smile. "Sorry, I wonder, can you tell me if..." "You didn't know about St. Lucy?" The woman shook her head. "And we didn't have partners in my day either. You either lived in wedlock or sin, and that was an end to it." Kelly said hastily, "This is such a lovely part of the world. I feel so lucky to be moving here, becoming part of the community." The old woman resumed her contemplation of an invisible spot in the distance. "We used to call a church a house of God. Not any longer." "The man who designed our house made a spectacular job of it," Kelly said. "Would you like to come and visit us, have a look round? We'd be happy to offer a cup of tea and scones." The woman coughed. "You don't understand." Kelly felt a nip of wind on her bare cheeks. "Well, I mustn't keep you, but it was nice to say hello. I'm called Kelly, by the way. Sorry, I don't know who you are." "My name is Honoria," the woman said. "Lovely." Kelly stretched out a hand. "So pleased to meet you, Honoria. And I look forward to seeing you again. Don't forget to look in next time you're passing. The tea and scones are a standing invitation." The woman stepped back from the gate and ignored Kelly's hand. "Do not sleep in that house tonight." Kelly stared. "I'm sorry." The woman limped back up the path towards her front door. The garden was a mess of nettles and ground elder, and the house cried out for a lick of paint. One of the ground floor windows was cracked. The sun disappeared behind a cloud. Kelly hurried back in the direction of Meadowview. "If you insist," Brett said. "It's not a matter of insisting," Kelly said. "Only, I didn't expect any of this. I have stuff to do back home." "This is your home now." "Yes, I mean the flat." She stroked his hand. "Look, it's only for one night. If you run me back, we can stay over." He sighed heavily, and she knew she had persuaded him. What she didn't know was why a stray remark from a stupid old woman had bothered her, so she didn't want to spend tonight in their new dream home. Honoria must be jealous of them. two young people with their lives ahead of them, everything to look forward to. The old cow would be reduced to a meagre state pension, surrounded by strangers in a village that had changed beyond all recognition. No wonder she was bitter and prepared to spoil the innocent pleasure of others. But spoil it she had. Kelly was determined not to stay here tonight. Of course, she couldn't explain to Brett. He would only laugh and say she was a gullible fool. It might make him wonder again what a tall, handsome Rhodes Scholar from Sydney had in common with a shy English girl who worked in a florist's shop. Things would be different in the bright light of morning. Honoria hadn't warned her against sleeping here in future, she reasoned. Nor would the woman have a second chance to make a nuisance of herself. From now on, Kelly meant to give her a wide berth. When they were in the car, she asked, "Who was St. Lucy then?" "I looked her up," Brett said, as he zigzagged past smaller vehicles into the fast lane of the motorway. He always relished parading his knowledge. They'd first met 12 months ago in a posh London bar when she was on a night out with a friend from school. Brett captained the winning team in a quiz, and he bought the girls champagne to celebrate his success. He was 6'7", with bleached blonde hair and the bluest eyes Kelly had ever seen. That night, he and Kelly made love for the first time. They've been together ever since. "I like to do my homework. Lucy is the patron saint of the blind." "I've never heard of her." "She was a Christian martyr who consecrated her virginity to the Lord." He sniggered. "When a marriage to a pagan bridegroom was arranged, she turned the fellow down. He took his revenge by denouncing her to the magistrate. She was ordered to burn a sacrifice, and when she refused, her sentence was to work as a prostitute." "Oh, poor wretch." "Yes," he considered her, blue eyes gleaming. "But the guards found they couldn't move her, even when she was hitched to a team of oxen. In their anger, they gouged out her eyes with a fork." She put her hand to her mouth, too shocked to speak. "Well, you did ask," he said. "Maybe she should have been more cooperative. Anyway, it's good to know the history of your own home. If we don't understand the past, how can we prepare for the future?" For a few miles, Kelly didn't say another word. Something puzzled her. When they were a couple of streets away from the flat, she asked, "How come you managed to buy the house so quickly? I heard on the news the property market is depressed." "It's a buyer's market," he said. "I put in a basement offer, non-negotiable, with a 24-hour deadline. The woman who was selling had to make her mind up on the spot. Take it or leave it, yes or no. She said yes, and that was that." "I thought you said the house was converted by a man called Dixon." "Yeah, but my vendor was a woman called Hitchmo, all right?" "How long had she lived there?" "I don't think she ever moved in." "What do you mean?" Keeping his eyes on the road, he said, "Have you been listening to gossip in the village while you were out on your walk?" "No, I don't understand." She fought to keep panic out of her voice. "What sort of gossip?" He exhaled. "It's only that someone died there."
"Where? In our new house?"
"Listen, there were protests about the regeneration of the village. The Not In My Backyard Brigade caused a load of trouble. Lost cause, obviously, but John Fryer, the old bloke who used to play the organ, decided to stand in the way of progress. He blocked the path of the builders' trucks. When the police were called in, he took shelter inside the church."
"Sanctuary?"
"Stupidity, more like. He was wasting his time, obviously. When they told him the church authorities wanted him out, he went berserk. He was a widower, and he reckoned the church and its organ were all he had left. Whatever happened to the afterlife, eh? Sounds to me like his so-called Christianity was only skin deep."
"What did Fryer do?"
"He threw himself from the loft onto the ground."
"Oh, no."
"Well, no maple floorboards at that time, needless to say. The church floor was solid stone. His head was smashed up, as you might expect. Utterly ridiculous." "What was he trying to prove?"
"Yet the conversion went ahead."
"Thank goodness it did, from our point of view. Not that it did Dixon much good."
"Why do you say that?"
"Fryer's death may have spooked him more than anybody realised. Then again, maybe he was just exhausted.
The project was almost complete. He'd been working at it night and day when he slipped off a ladder, fractured his skull.
He died too?
Afraid so. The place was on the market for a year or more until a Hitchmo woman bought it from Dixon's family.
You mean two people met their deaths in our house?
Oh, what's so unusual about that? Not everyone dies in hospital, you know. His lips tightened. That unborn baby of yours died in your flat. Have you forgotten?
Kelly bit her tongue, didn't say a word.
This is how things get snarled up when people react emotionally. He clenched his fist, trying to keep control. For some reason, Hitchmo got the wind up herself. That's why she never moved in.
But it took her a long time to sell.
Blame the economy, sweetie. Hitchmo was desperate. That's why she bit my hand off, even at a massive undervalue. One person's misfortune is another slice of luck. That's how life goes.
So not a single person has slept in the house since it stopped being a church?
He gave her a sideways look. Exciting, isn't it, sweetie? We have our very own virgin home. You and I are the first real occupants. They returned to Meadowview at noon the next day. While Brett busied himself with calls to clients on his mobile, she tiptoed into the porch, closed the double door without a sound, and set off down the lane towards the village. Soon she arrived at the cottage where she'd met Honoria. She'd changed her mind about avoiding the old woman. Sometimes you needed to confront your fears. That was why she'd asked the doctor whether she was going to lose the baby. She was due a break. If she interrogated Honoria about what happened to John Fryer, and Dixon for that matter, chances were she'd find there was nothing to worry about. Accidents happen every day. You can't allow your life to be taken over by fear. The garden gate was latched, but nobody was in sight. Kelly pushed open the gate and strode up to the door. When she pressed the bell, nobody answered. She knocked furiously until her knuckles hurt, but with the same result. That cracked front window was festooned with cobwebs. Peering through the grimy panes, Kelly saw the room was empty. Yellowed newspapers covered the floor, but there was no furniture. Honoria must live in the back. It wasn't uncommon for old people to confine their living quarters to small portions of their homes when the whole house became difficult to manage. Kelly trudged back to Meadowview to find removal men, hurriedly unloading her possessions. Brett's mobile was still clamped to his ear, and big boxes full of her bits and pieces were strewn across the rear part of the ground floor, between the sofas and the steps to the gallery. By the time the removal men departed, she'd emptied a couple of packing cases, and at last Brett was off the phone. He wrapped her in his arms and lifted her off the ground. Time to celebrate! I thought I'd cook us a nice meal this evening, if you can pick up some food and champagne. I read your mind, he crowed. A couple of bottles of Bolly are cooling in the fridge. I'm expecting a delivery van from that hypermarket on the retail park. It's due in an hour, bringing everything we could possibly need. Oh, you're wonderful. She kissed him hard, determined to push the image of miserable old Honoria out of her mind. See the silver candlesticks I left on top of that packing case? They're heirlooms. They belong to my grandmother. Very nice, he said absently. We can use them some other time, once you've given them a polish. There are fresh candles in a holder for the table in the delivery I ordered.
Oh, you think of everything, she murmured.
Trust me, sweetie, it's all about getting the details right. Like I say, we have an hour before the van arrives, and I know just what to do in the meantime.
She nuzzled his ear. Tell me.
Laughing, he swung her over his shoulder and carried her up the staircase towards the mezzanine gallery and the four-poster bed.
How does the underfloor heating work? She asked later.
Digitise utility control panel in the porch. I switched the system on before the delivery arrived. They were lying on the bed, his long, long limbs entwining hers. As soon as they'd unpacked the food delivery, he'd hauled her back up to bed. She felt exhausted, and right now the warmth of his flesh mattered more than the pleasure of intimacy.
But the place is freezing.
Amused, he said, well, you're not wearing any clothes, that's why. But even so, her teeth had started to chatter. Are you sure the heating isn't broken? If the house hasn't been occupied? Brett scowled as he disentangled himself from her.
Better hadn't be broken, otherwise I'll be on to my lawyer first thing tomorrow.
She jumped off the bed and threw on a gown, retrieved from the packing cases. Her stomach rumbled, reminding her to start preparing their meal.
What's this? She said, pointing up towards the ceiling.
Didn't I tell you? He roared with delight. How could I forget? Up there is the bell tower, and that's the pull rope. We can ring our very own church bell. Kelly couldn't sleep. Perhaps it was the champagne. Brett had downed most of it, but she'd drunk more than usual, and although he started snoring the moment his head touched the pillow, her thoughts kept racing, and she found it impossible to slow them down enough to enable her to drift out of consciousness. Cocooned by the duvet, her feet no longer felt like ice. During their meal, they'd needed to resort to using her old electric fan heater. Even then, she'd worn a thick sweater. Brett, made of sterner stuff, remained in shirt sleeves. Although he'd grown up around Sydney's surfing beaches, cold weather amused him, as if it presented a challenge a strong young fellow must overcome as a matter of honour. Besides, Meadowview was fully insulated, and the roof weatherproofed with the latest materials, not a single crack for the night air to creep in. As he drained his glass, he told her that the coldness was all in her mind. Her imagination was too vivid, according to Brett, though sometimes she feared it wasn't vivid enough. It failed her whenever she tried to picture St. Lucy's as a place of worship. How many years had John Fryer played the organ here, to the deaf ears of people who were close to death? She fancied she could hear the strains of the Tarkatan fugue echoing in her brain. Did they often play that in rural churches? She couldn't recall the names of hymns from her childhood. The darkness was absolute. Brett had been diligent about turning off even the standby lights on their electrical equipment. It was a ritual with him, as close as he ever came to religious observance. It wasn't about saving money. He could afford to keep lights burning all night, every night. But he insisted on doing his share to save the planet. Her throat felt dry and scratchy after the alcohol. She should have drunk more water, and despite the cold outside the bed, she thought she'd better go downstairs and pour herself a glass. She reached out through the curtain and fumbled for the bedside light. But when she pressed the switch, nothing happened. She swore under her breath. If the power supply had failed, she ought to check the control panel in the porch. Brett had mentioned some kind of fail-safe gizmo, but she'd better not disturb him. He'd be furious if anything went wrong on the first night in his dream home. That was the point, she realised, as she put one foot on the chilly floorboards. This was his dream, not hers. Not yet, anyway. Surely she couldn't allow old Honoria to ruin things forever. Easing herself out of the bed, she pulled on the gown. Thankfully, its fleecy lining kept out the chill. Better be careful, venturing down those steps with open treads. It was all very well for Brett to brag about safety features, but when you couldn't see a thing, you needed to take care. One foot in front of the other. No rush, she reminded herself. At last, she reached ground level. Her soles were freezing, but a couple of kilims were stretched out on the floor near the sofa. As she padded across them, something brushed against her cheek. Something cold and slithery. It was like being stroked by the thin fingers of a creature from another world. She couldn't help jumping back, and the movement knocked over the pot containing the tall palm whose fronds had touched her. The pot smashed on the floor, and she screamed with the shock of it. Not even Brett could sleep through that. The sound of movement came from upstairs. What's happening? He sounded groggy. No wonder after drinking so much. She wanted to call to reassure him, but her throat had dried, and when she tried to shout, no sound came. Kelly, where are you? He swore viciously. What have you done to the lights? As she heard him clambering out of bed, she found her voice at last. Brett, it's all right.
We are trying to get away, he bellowed. What did they tell you about this place?
Nothing, nothing, had she woken him from a savage nightmare. It was only an old woman.
You bitch, why did I ever think you'd have the guts? He sounded frantic, unreasoning. She heard the crash of the bell in the tower. He must be pulling on the rope. His rage terrified her. She needed to get back to the mezzanine gallery and calm him down, but she dreaded cutting her feet on shards from the plant pot. Fear rooted her as the bell stopped clanging and she heard him thunder around on the upper floor. I can't see you, but I know you're there.
Brett, why?
Something happened so quickly that afterwards she found it impossible to describe. A terrible crash ripped through the silence, and she knew at once that Brett had fallen from the gallery. Despite the rails and safety panels, it was easy for such a tall man to pitch over while flailing around in the dark and plunge to the ground. Only when she found the switch to restore the power and bright lights banished the darkness did she realise that one of the wooden packing cases had broken his fall. But it hadn't saved him. The impact must have been horrific. Worst of all, he'd fallen head first, straight onto her precious silver candlesticks. She dared not look as she dialed 999, but when the ambulance arrived, one of the paramedics threw up the moment he tried to shift the body. His colleague told Kelly what even a man familiar with death found so shocking. The candlesticks had taken out both of Brett's eyes. As her strength returned, Kelly worked on the tribute. White lilies, white roses, and white gerberas, with green ferns for contrast. When she had finished, she thought it the most beautiful wreath she had ever made. Time for her last journey to the village. She took a taxi from her flat, not wanting to brave the motorway. A for sale sign stood outside Meadow View. The car stopped at the gate to the memorial garden, and she asked the driver to wait while she laid the wreath. It didn't take long for her to find the grave she sought. Not Brett's, of course. There had been a cremation in London, which she was too unwell to attend. No flowers by request, but donations to his favourite ethical causes. Everyone agreed. It was as he would have wished. Kelly felt a lump come to her throat as she stared down at the small black stone bearing John Fryer's name. In the act of bending to lay the wreath, she halted. John Fryer's wife had been buried with him. An inscription said simply that she had fallen asleep. It was her Christian name and the date of her passing that caused Kelly to scream. Honoria Fryer died 3 months before her husband.
No Flowers is copyrighted by Martin Edwards. Music for the podcast is by Vladimir Hirsch and was obtained from the Community Audio section of the Internet Archive. Mixing for this podcast was done by Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one by visiting our website at www.themysteryplace.com/EQMM.